Here I go. This is Jay Nemerall. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 626. And, you know, I just figure I'm going to call it Insights into... I think I'm going to do an Insights into the Zenith lifestyle. Not lifestyle. Into Zenith. God. Jeez. Couldn't even help. I am on my way from Clovis to Fort Sumner. On the way to Santa Rosa. I might decide to take a back route because I like taking back routes whenever I can. We'll just see how that goes. If I eat during the broadcast, just know that, hey, what other time do I have to eat? Since I chew up all my spare time doing, you know, other things. Excuse me, is my phone acting funny again? I get these weird noises. What on earth is it doing? Okay. And this all has to do with some of the Polynesian stuff I've been talking about, some of I swear I should keep a recorder on me all the time, because these insights come out, and yet it's not time for, you know, I'm not traveling, therefore I've always got problems. So... here I am, trying to reconstruct something that I actually said was quite illuminating yesterday, and it might not be so illuminating today. You know, when I was trying to come up with things about the things I talked about with Joe, and the kind of insights and things that came into my head, I found myself stumbling, and I often do. So hopefully someday, I'll come up with a better thing. Maybe I'll have a lapel mic on my lapel, and I'll constantly record everything I do, and then I'll chop it down into recordings. I might ultimately go in that direction. I've been looking at dictation equipment, but it's kind of pricey for me. I'm cheap. Cheap is my predominant way of being, beyond just, I don't know what. Okay. Anyway, they're going to hear me eat. I hope it's not too smacky and produces too many problems. Well, I was thinking about the whole Polynesian thing. When I was thinking about I started thinking about child development again. And that started me thinking about Zenith. And I started to make a correlation. I'm not really sure if it's true. Of course, I'm not really sure anything I really get into is true, as in the last and final word, and I've got it right. But certainly an interesting idea, maybe deserving of an exploration. I started to think, okay, take how Polynesians are to Hollies. I'm sure I say that wrong. I'm not trying... I think it's more like... how these, you know, which is an interesting thing for English people to say, because we always... you know, we're going to get the glottal stops wrong. Well, the difference is between us and the Polynesians. Let's say that. The difference between Zenith and regular people. And how one is influenced by the other. Often in the autistic cultural circles, autism, you know, when people think about autism, it's all about you have a disease, and so everybody gathers around with a view to eradicate it. You know, that your difference from other people is an illness or a dysfunction, and our great effort, you know, our great talent becomes you know, getting rid of that stuff. The great noble cause is we're going to cure autism in our time. It's like, and autism culture people who are part of the autism culture, of which I find myself more and more always going in that direction, because I think it's just kinder. I don't even know if it's really a question of truth so much as it's a question of it just being kind to people. It's always easy to talk about cure, cure, cure when people can't communicate back with you and say, thank you for finding the cure. Or thank you for trying. It's disconcerting, especially among autistics, because the answer to that question typically is thank you for all your fine efforts, you know, taking brain scans of us and doing all kinds of weird behavior modification techniques like we're animals. And, you know, who wants to feel like that? So, that ends up being a real basic nutshell, doesn't really cover the full scope of how people feel. That's what that is. I come from that kind of mindset. And the mindset is, culture is that what autistic people are is basically a good thing. It does provide us with interesting attributes. We are essentially different. Now, it depends on how you feel about differences as to which way you kind of lean. Curists, at least in relation to autism, don't want differences. They feel like being different is to be lesser. And so the curist sweeps in, starts making all kinds of, you know, tries to affect all kinds of changes to make them more like everybody else, because, you know, the predominant theory is what everybody else has is better. And the culture basically says, there's some really good traits to what I have, or I consider them good. I don't want to lose them. Let's call them strengths. Let's mitigate our problems. If we need help with shopping, if we need help with communication, if we need any of these things, let's look toward making these things come to pass. As opposed to everything else. Well, So, I think that gives kind of a view on these things. So I approach it from a culturalist standpoint as opposed to a curist standpoint. I'm not trying to get cured. I'm trying to figure out if there's something somewhat cultural about it. Of course, in earlier podcasts, I've talked about the interesting thing about calling it a culture. That really doesn't answer it, because we don't come from a certain place. We don't have a certain language or a certain you know, it's almost like we're kind of a subculture in that, you know, we only fit a few of the criteria of being a culture. One of them is we have similar behaviors, many of us, and not really all of us. And I've always been trying to figure out exactly how to describe this best so people understand. When I came up with the whole term Zenith, it was a effort to do this. Ultimately, what I've come down to, and especially since now I've been thinking about Polynesian things, since my brother is going to be interfacing heavily with Polynesian culture, that I've been thinking about this again. When we set societal norms, for instance, we tend to take a snapshot of what everybody's doing, and at some point we label that normal. You know, a place in time. I used to be in the child development field. To a large degree, I am not now, for various philosophical reasons, which will be explained. If you haven't already listened to old archives of the podcast, I explain my whole take on child development. But let me tell you how it relates to this. Child development is taking a snapshot. Jean Piaget and Eric Erickson, they are among the pillars of child development. Jean Piaget was all about, he was big into observation and into finding correlations, connections. And when you're doing scientific things, that's an excellent thing to do. You know, he got praise for his papers that described what was normal for, say, a four-year-old, a 48-month-old person to be doing. And he could spell it all out right there. He had observed them heavily. You know, do they skip? They can skip this way. Can they hop on one foot? You know. What we've done since then is to codify this stuff, and we get to define dysfunction by one's deviance, for lack of a better term. One's inability. Does that sound better? We don't like to use the word deviant. Politically correct people. Somebody who doesn't quite meet those expectations, whether high or low, they're different, strange, and our culture has decided that the most important thing is that we be well-rounded. That's a cultural thing for us. We really value, and we spend the first 18 years of life, and even pushed on further into just trying to make somebody well-rounded. We probably think the most vital things that everybody must know is how to pay a power bill, how to go grocery shopping with the least amount of embarrassment. You know, and these things end up just being the most important things. Which is funny because I think these are things are pretty low. But that's my take on it. A lot of people really struggle with that. And they would love, or I guess, we train them culturally to say that, you know, boy, your life will just be so much better if you have a good grocery store experience. And so, you know, it's almost like that's what we spend the first 18 years of life. It's among the things that we try to make the most important things, you know. If they can do this, by golly, we've accomplished our goal. And it's like, you know, and that anything else is just icing on the cake. And it's like, well, is that really true? And when I've gotten down to it myself, I find that that's not important. Because honestly, let's take a look at the Polynesians for a minute. especially those who don't live in a world that has a grocery store. You don't have a store there. You don't do things like that. You know, most of them have gardens. I can't say most of them. The pictures we see of them have them having gardens, and they do that, and they go to, they take their produce to market, they sell it, and they buy what they need. They come from a world that's much more market-oriented than ours, which is store-oriented, you know, and there's rules of conduct, and yada, 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 but the rules are different, you know. In different places, you have different rules of conduct. Although we in the Western world have decided that ours is superior, ours should oversee all others, and we put in supermarkets wherever we can, right? That seems to be one of our institutions, is thou shalt have a supermarket. You can go to one store and buy almost everything you need if it comes to daily living needs, food and stuff like that. You can go to a grocery store and get that. And, you know, and the kind of decorum you need to have when you're in there. We become very offended if we see a woman in a burqa in a supermarket. That's inappropriate. Might look better, you know, in an Arab market. We can handle that better because, you know, these people are low, slimy, sick. You know, however you want to look at it, if you want to try to do it PC, they're being ethnic and cultural, and isn't that cute? And it's like, no, this is the reality of their lives. This is, and it may be better in some ways, it may be worse in others than the way that we've conducted things. Nothing says ours is superior. I'm certain that Heavenly Father, God, doesn't really view it one way or another. So you're taking care of your personal needs, good for you. You know, please don't spend your whole life thinking that this is the most important thing. There's other things to consider, too. There it is. Ah. So, but we get really pushy with our culture. Everywhere that we go, we want to have McDonald's. We want to have, you know, a supermarkety looking thing. Now that we've gotten Walmart, we want there to be Walmarts everywhere we go, in every part of the world. If there's not a Walmart there, you can see it in like a woman's face, that she is flustered and somewhat indignant, and saying, you know, why isn't there what I'm used to here? How dare you people not have a place that I can interface with? Of course, because Western society is so invasive, it wants to be everywhere, it tends to be everywhere. Because, you know, local cultures kind of shrug at these things and say, whatever, because that's how, at least in their world, all these things came about. They just kind of happened. You know, you start a market, it wasn't because of some great, you know, marketing coup. Oh, yeah, we're going to have a market. So, no, that's just the way it was. You know, it just kind of naturally, organically happened. You don't naturally, organically get Walmart. You know, that doesn't just happen. That's constructed. That's years of how can we get people to separate as much money from their pocketbook as they can and give it to me. You know, it doesn't lend itself to, you know, market type of, this is my spot, I put up a stall here, and I sell my wares, and I may pay some kind of a tax for the wonderful opportunity to be here, but that's it, you know. That's much more natural, it seems, and much more organic, and in these countries, that's the way things tend to be. Of course, you know, you can always change it by government being too intrusive. In our country, it's not so much government. This is the United States I'm talking about. It's not so much the government that gets intrusive into things like that. It's much more of a corporate thing, you know. Corporations tend to dictate these things. That's why America looks the way it does. It's predominantly corporatism. Our government isn't so isn't so out there. I've been in countries where you know, the government's really obvious. You know, they're walking the streets with you know, automatic machine guns. They're, you know, every fifth building that isn't like a hovel is a government building. You can tell it says, you know, it was in French in Togo, you know. Togolese. I can't speak French. And, you know, it just is like that, where in our country it's not. Although we are starting to trend more toward a more kind of intrusive, invasive government, certain populations prefer that to what we've had for probably the last 50 years, which is really big encroaching corporatism. We're just switching one out for the other, and not really. We're just kind of encouraging the growth of government. They're kind of co-evolving now. But you can look back and you can say, okay, you know, people in foreign countries that do markets or that just trade simply with one another, it may even be a more simple thing because, you know, in a small island in the South Pacific, you may not have enough people to really justify the kind of structure that a market is. A market's made for larger groups of people getting together. People from neighboring towns coming to your central place, kind of the central public commons, to present their wares. That doesn't often happen on an island. You know, islands become kind of a quayside sort of a thing. If a trader were to come trading stuff with you, he might spread it out on the quay, on the dock, whatever you want to call it. And you know, that's where just the trading with that particular person would come in. It may be a little bit more discreet than, like, say, kind of a marketplace that we kind of think of, kind of a medieval market, which is what our Western eyes say, oh, okay, I can get my hand around that. This one's more like truck pulled up to the side of the road and opens up the side of it and it transacts business with whoever happens to come by. That's what that's. It's more like kind of a street vendor type of attitude is what typically happens. You may do it all along the same street, but it isn't so market-like. Anyway, so Here we see the clash of cultures between, like, say, what you might consider a Polynesian way of interacting to what we would consider to be a more Western way of interacting. And they're much different. Some ways better, some ways worse. And in many ways, it just kind of depends on what you're used to and how you're accustomed to doing things. That's what it ends up being. Westerners are very pushy. Everything must function the way they like. Our tax system is set up to favor, you know, corporatism. When you don't behave like that, they don't know what to do with you. Their tendency is to punish you punitively for not behaving the way that they expect you to behave. Therefore, they might get taxed more. There might be more fees on you for not behaving right. That's ultimately what happened to me. When I was doing my computer work for just normal people, consumers, I was more of a going out to their house and doing the work where they are. That was one of my selling points, was that, you know, you didn't have to try to unplug all your computer, box it up, and drag it into a computer store. I would actually come to where you are. That's not very American. That's not how we work. It's not very Western. Some places it might be like that, but most of the time it's not. I end up getting treated more, when I do stuff like that, I end up getting treated more like your phone company guy or something like that. They don't expect to have to pay you they expect a bill to come and they'll pay the bill, you know, because it comes with your phone bill, you know, or if your electrician comes, you know, half the time it's actually somebody from the power company and you don't pay him. You know, if there's any charge to be made, it'll come in a bill. And, of course, I didn't do that. I tried to be cash, and that created problems. A lot of people could do it. Some people just didn't like that because they were into the whole satisfaction guaranteed. You know, they had a kind of a department store mentality that I was dealing with millions and millions of people, and if they screwed me around, I was expected to have a huge buffer to handle that, and I wasn't. I came and I worked on something you wanted me to work on. I expected to be paid for my time. Whether the ultimate solution happened, I was always working for a solution. I wanted to give you a solution. But honestly, when it got down to it, that wasn't what you were paying me for. You know, I always tried to give people the impression that I was more of a doctor. You know, you don't pay doctors to fix you. You pay a doctor for his time, by and large. Although it's not a direct one-to-one correlation between his time and what he's doing. You know, the whole insurance industry has codified this stuff down to, you know, this is how much time it should take to do something like this. If you're a crappy doctor and you're slow or you don't do a good job, we'll pay you the same amount if it takes you 5 hours to get this done as if it takes you one. You know, and that's where that stuff comes in. So I was trying to do it maybe the Polynesian way of just saying, hey, you want me to come do something? It'll cost you this much for my time. And it bothered some people. And, of course, my business didn't do very well for the simple reason that people would say, you know, hey, I don't want to do it that way. Because I could just take it down to the computer store. There's a place called Shipley's. I don't know how good of technicians they ultimately end up being. But, you know, they are basically, I would call them a tier one computer thing. Their basic answer to all questions is uninstall it, reinstall it. You know, if we can figure out what part it is, we'll replace that part, that assembly. And if your software isn't working right, that's not our problem. You know, where I go deeper than that, I tend to take on these problems, and that's probably not a good way to do it, because then I tend to be kind of a doctor about it. I tend to get kind of possessive. And, you know, people start treating me like somebody that's supposed to bring them satisfaction, and, you know, most computer stores don't do that. You know, if there's something wrong, they'll tell you. If it's a software issue, they kind of say, well, you can uninstall it and reinstall it. We didn't install it, so we won't service it. And that's kind of their take on it. And I didn't do that, and I think that led to part of the downfall of it. But it's also, you know, it's also some other commercial thing. I had to pay $100 a year for a license to behave that way. A guy who had a storefront, who had a store, he only had to pay $25. Because that's the difference between the two. They were punitive about people that came into town, you know, breezed in, did whatever they did, sold whatever they sold, then breezed back out. They don't like that. Kind of a gypsy way of being. And mine looked more gypsy than anything else. So they were somewhat punitive toward me. You know, that's a cultural thing. I don't know if in other countries they are. Maybe they aren't. You know, I think in Western countries they tend to kind of be this way. I know in my city in New Mexico, it's definitely that way. It's very punitive. Bricks and mortar places do not want competition. Therefore, they try to punish you if you don't look like you're going to stay in town for a while. So, I'm sorry, I'm eating bread again. I started thinking about the difference between... Polynesians and Haoles, which are white people. I don't know which particular language that comes from. It may be a Hawaiian term, I don't know. It sounds around Tongans a lot. It tends to be a Tongan term. Joe actually used, I guess he got called that. And, so I'm guessing that at least they tend to use it in Hawaii. I'm trying to look and see what I got. There's a big difference there, big cultural difference. Now, Westerners proceed as they normally do. They're kind of Pocahontas effect. I call it that, not just because that's a real vivid thing, and it's something that people might still remember from the Pocahontas movie that was done by Disney. Kids can see it, you know, and they can say, oh, you know, Westerners are evil and wicked because, you know, we're trying to push our culture on everybody else, and we always say that how superior we are. And we do. We do that all the time. We insist that third world countries behave the way we want them to. It's kind of like joining the international community, which we control, you know. You have to have a well-organized government. You have to have a structured tax system. You have to, you know, your people must have well-defined, spelled-out rights that the government ignores. You know, you have to do all these different things. And you know, a lot of these countries, unless they went to, you know, a lot of them want to get industrialized because they see the benefits of it, especially people who get, you know, the more affluent ones that tend to go to school in Britain or America or Australia or somewhere like that. Or New Zealand. And they learn about these Western practices. And you have to understand, our wealth predominantly comes from being able to, number one, well, the first level of it is being able to obey the system. The second level is to creatively manipulate the system. You can think about Enron, for instance. That was an example of the established system being manipulated for profit. Of course, once people saw what was going on, they tried to put a new law to prevent this from happening, but somebody will just manipulate that system. But we tend to praise and lionize those that manipulate these things. So we become a really manipulative people, and since you have to have that system to manipulate it, our whole point is when we first go into somewhere, we start calling you uncivilized, named savages, and we try to start putting our system into place. Because, you know, we can't get very good control of you when we don't understand what you're doing. The only way we can really understand is to put our system into place, and then we dominate you by understanding the system better than you do. That's the whole point. You know, you have to keep people off guard. That's how the world works. At least that's how the Western world tends to work. and to varying degrees in other places. In the Middle East, for instance, the countries that tend to do better and tend to thrive really well are those who can play on the Westerner, could play in the Westerner system but not get dominated by it. You know, they can come to meetings in suits, you know, and they can and they can speak with a flourish, and you know, they can give every impression that they can't be, you know, messed with particularly from a Western standpoint. But then they have the wonderful thing to fall back on of they can do what seems to work in their culture. The Middle East seems to have a culture of, you know, tribal domination, macho guy business, stuff that we kind of look down on, but that frankly, if it got loose in our system, it would destroy it. You know, we're all about being gentlemen and stuff like that, and we one-up each other, you know. The most lionized man is the man who is the smoothest. The man who gets, you know, what do you call it? Fawned over. The guy who, you know, you're Donald Trump type. You know, you really can't say, oh, it's a certain hairstyle, it's a certain way of talking. It has to do with power, but power has all these interesting trappings in the West. And some people get some power through just having the trappings. It's called looking. Looking a certain way helps in Western culture. It may help in other cultures too, but, you know, other things look better in other ways, you know. In many ways, what the heck is going on here? Why is this window gone down on me? And I can't put it up. This window isn't working. I hate electronic windows. When something bad happens, you're stuck with a window that can't be used. You can't even wire it up. And it's stuck. I've got a stuck window. Everything else works, but this window back here now does not work. Great. Another difference between Western culture and you know, Polynesian type stuff. You know, a Polynesian would probably think that this is really cool, but he might immediately come back and say, I don't like it because I don't feel in control. I feel like something else is controlling things that I can't, you know, that I don't have control over. Westerners don't get that weird about it. We like those little things. I should probably pull over and see if I can get my car to behave better. So I'm going to stop this. But I didn't really get the point. Let me get to the point. I've been dawdling around making comments about this and that. The whole point is I think the differences between the Polynesians and the Haoles, which are white people, us, Westerner types, the difference between those two, I think, can be correlated to the difference between autistics and straight people. You know, we may speak the same language when we can speak. We may even look similar. You know, same skin color, same hair color. The things that you would normally say, this person's like me. Of course, once we open our mouths and start talking any, you know, even if we put up a front, try and make ourselves look normal. Give me some cracks. And like that. Every once in a while you'll see a Polynesian try to act like a white guy. Not very often, I've got to tell you. Their parent very happy and settled and proud of their culture. They're not terribly interested in what you have to offer. It doesn't have much meaning to them. They don't see it as superior. I don't know how they see it. They like what they've got, and they're not terribly invested in what you have. You know, which is what all Westerners think, right? All Westerners say to themselves, everybody wants to be me. Everybody wants to be like us. Why? Because we're the top dogs. We're dominant. We're everybody's goal. Everybody wants to be an American. You go, you know what? You'd be surprised how many people really don't care. Or how many people have these weird notions about what being an American is that don't really correlate with reality. Or they come here and they go, oh, I don't know. Of course, a lot of people come knowing that they're going to have to change their culture to fit in, and that's what they do. Americans don't do that. Everybody must accommodate them. You know, our culture is dominant. And of course, the fact that everybody else, it appears that everybody else does that, you know. We all want to be Americans. If we don't even go to America, we want to look like Americans and act like Americans. And it's like, you know, that doesn't help Americans not get a swelled head. That makes Americans think they're all that. Okay, I gotta go. This is Jay Nemro. Hang on. I'll be back in a second. I'm back. The window got itself pulled together. That was good. And, so we're okay there. Sound dynamic might be better. I think I've eaten enough. I can stop now. And so, I'm going to take the back way. I like taking the back way to things. I'm not particularly enamored of civilization. Not to say I want to abandon it completely, but anytime I can get away from it, I'm game. So, okay. Fine knockdown. People not being respectful, but that's okay. You know, people are going to be not respectful. I'm not saying it's okay if they're not respectful. What I'm saying is, what are you going to do about it? Let's not get weird. That's what I'm saying. The other thing is definitely against culture. So, I think I'm going to make a two-parter. So I'm going to bring this one to a halt. I think I've pretty much died. I don't want to get started when I'm at 44 minutes on another one. So, I mean, I'm trying to continue this to make the point. So we're going to have a part two of Insights. Everything I do is Insights, isn't it? At least sights that I see, inside, yeah, into Zenithness. So next time will be part two. This is Jay Nemro. This has been episode number 262. Have a great day.